Broadcasting live from Roberta's in Bushwick, Brooklyn, you're listening to HeritageRadioNetwork.com.
In some of my songs, I have casually mentioned the fact that I like to drink beer. This little song is more to the point. Roll out the barrel and lend me your ears. I like beer. It makes me a jolly good fellow. I like beer. It helps me unwind and sometimes it makes me feel mellow.
Makes me feel mellow.
Welcome to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. It's Tuesday, December 13th, 2011. I'm Jimmy Carboni from Jimmy's Number 43. Joined tonight by my co-host, Jen Swertman from The Blind Tiger.
Hi, Jimmy.
How are you doing, Jen?
Really well. Ho, ho, ho. We're in the holiday season.
We sure are. We went to a great party last week. The Heritage Radio Network.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun.
At Tandem Bar on Troutman Street in Bushwick. That was pretty rolling. There must be like 28 different hosts on the Heritage Radio Network.
Yeah, it was fun to meet some of those people who I've heard but haven't met before.
Did you feel like you're part of a special thing?
Yeah, absolutely. Really, like a really amazing group of eclectic people.
Well, we love having you on the show.
Oh, I love being here.
You make a big difference. And we've got a lot of listeners out there. In fact, I had a guest the other night from England. His name's Garen Baker. And he said that he listens to Heritage all the time, to our Beer Sessions radio show. And I just wanted to say, hey, Garen, thanks for coming in. Garen Baker from Plymouth, England. And that's pretty cool. We've had a lot of guests call in, guests from San Diego, Michigan, Florida, and now we know we have some guests in England, too.
Yeah.
What do you think about that? You think it's cool?
I think it's really cool. I guess, I had no idea. It's a little scary. Maybe I'm a little intimidated now.
Well, we should thank our sponsor, GreatBrewers.com. They're helping to get the word out. Take the Great Brewers Test 100. See what you can do. At Sam Merritt's Cicerone training class the other day, we had a couple listeners in, and they said they had taken the test, and they're up to a 78. So.
What does that mean?
Well, it's from 0 to 100.
Oh, okay. If you they're getting there.
Above a 70, you pass.
Very good.
I got a 72 on my first try, but I recommend it. Great Brewers Test, the 100.
I still have not gotten around to that.
You got to take it. It's the model for the Cicerone exam.
I know. I've been lazy.
Sam Merritt helped come up with it. So, but that's a chit chat. We got a little chit chat tonight. We got some special guests in the audience here in the studio. I'm really happy to have a guy that we know. Some of you know him as Chief. I'm looking forward to sailing on his cool ship when he gets it built. His name's Jeff O'Neill. He was at Ithaca Brewing for a while, and now he's with Peekskill Brewing. Jeff, how are you? Welcome to the show.
I'm doing great. Thanks a lot for having us here. It's a treat.
You know everybody. You know the beer scene in New York. I know you know Jen pretty well.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'm a fan of his work and have been for a long time.
And vice versa.
Oh, thanks.
Mutual Admiration Society.
You were with Ithaca for a long time, right?
Yeah, started there in 2002.
Yeah, 9 years.
Yeah,
so that was a bit of history.
Yeah, yeah.
For you and for Ithaca.
Oh, yeah, we had a great time and obviously a lot of success. Good time to do what we do.
But things change and evolve.
Yeah, absolutely.
So tell us what you built it up. When it started, how many barrels of beer were you making?
When I started there in 2002, they were about 4 years into it and had just done maybe 1,200 or so barrels a year before. And this year, they're about 10 times that size, so about tenfold in 10 years.
And what made you come? You're coming to the Hudson Valley region of New York, Peekskill. What attracted you to that?
Well, I love the place that these guys have. I've been in there a couple of times over the years. They've been a great account for Ithaca Beer. We've had a number of events there, and
it's a brew pub, right?
It's a brew pub, yep. And they've been open 3 years, and you know, good people. They become friends, and it's just a terrific opportunity with what's on the horizon for us there. We have a new site that we just took possession of in the last couple of weeks, and
is it close to the old site?
It's a block away. Yeah.
Okay, so and that's an additional site. That's production.
It will be the ultimate site.
Okay.
We're going to sort of transition into
the whole
pub. Yeah, but it'll take some time. We'll start brewing there first, and then move the whole pub over across the street over the next year.
So you're here with Keith and Kara Barati, the owners of Peekskill. What's the name of the brewery?
So it's called the Peekskill Brewery. It was very important for us to establish ourselves as a neighborhood place, and I think that there's no better way than naming yourself after the city that you're in.
All right. And you're ambitious bringing in Jeff. What are your goals with the brewery?
Sure. So I love beer bars, love packaging breweries, but I think there's something special about a brew pub where you can have the entire experience all under one roof. So what we did was we went out and got the best chef that we possibly could, Sean Corcoran, and got the best brewer that we possibly could, and matched that with really intensive training with our staff, so that we have a really enthusiastic group of people that are selling.
Who are knowledgeable enough to know how to sell it.
Oh, they're more knowledgeable than just enough.
That's great.
They're really, really invested in it. It's really cool to be a part
it's
of.
It's hard to find that.
Yeah, it really is.
Is there a cool scene up there in Peekskill?
Yeah. I mean, when we opened, which was 3 years ago, Captain Lawrence had just opened, and they're a fantastic brewery. I know you guys know them.
Absolutely.
And since we've opened, Peekskill has, I think, three or four new bars, one of which is the Birdsall House, which you know them well as well.
Absolutely.
as well as an Irish pub, a wine bar. So there's a nice little scene going on.
And how long have you been in business? Did you mention that?
Yeah, we'll be celebrating our fourth anniversary in the springtime.
That's really exciting. And you know what I was going to say is I actually haven't been up there to see you guys yet. I'll make a point of it, but it is pretty rare to find a brew pub where they're paying close attention to all facets. So you tried to find the best chef. That didn't come as an afterthought. A lot of times beer is the primary focus and the food's just sort of like, oh God, we've got to feed these people too to keep them drinking. And it ends up not, you know, like you find all the effort goes into one part of the business. So
sure.
For you to really like make that attempt to find balance between the two and then support like a really, you know, excited staff.
Sure. We're lucky or smart, depending on how you look at it. We're 45 minutes north of Manhattan, which is, you can get any ingredient in the world, but we're also about 15 minutes from the Black Dirt Country. And the Hudson Valley's bounty is just endless. So it was very important for us to put together the whole package. Like I said before, beer and food go hand in hand to me, and the whole experience under one roof is just very hard to find.
Wow. You know, I first met you this summer. You had someone at the Omegang Festival, Belgium Comes at Cooperstown. I think that's the first time I ever tried Peekskill beer.
Yeah, sure. We're pretty lucky that we came along at a time when I think there was almost like a second resurgence of craft beer, and people like Jeff at Ithaca at the time at Ithaca, and Scott from Captain Lawrence, and the boys at Umagong really took us under their wing, and we were invited to BCTC the first year that we were open, and brought up some beer when we probably didn't even have enough to serve at the pub, and it's just that kind of community, and we're just growing along with it.
Wow, that's pretty cool. Hey, Jeff, what made you consider coming down to Peekskill? I mean, you said a little bit about it, but it's a big jump. I mean, when people heard about it, it sounded like it was this, you know, huge news flash. You know, Jeff O'Neill, a big famous brewer,
well,
coming to a little
brewpub. It's just beer. It's not,
oh,
you know,
come on.
You know, it's just an opportunity to be closer to the people enjoying the product, the art, if you will. And to have that bond, like so many of the people that I've met just in the 6 weeks I've been down there, they already know me because they're in love with Flower Power, and they, you know, they're super excited to have me on board. The customers are super excited to have me on board, not to mention the staff. Like I say, it's just a great opportunity, a great time to do something hyper local. I was actually born in Poughkeepsie, so it's sort of like a not too far removed from like my roots, and you know, it's time for a change, and change is good, and I'm really excited about really having my hands completely into every facet of it, which is something that you lose as a place grows, for better or worse. So as we grew Ithaca, it's more, you know, bigger and bigger staff, you know, not to knock it at all, but it's not exactly where I wanted to be for the next foreseeable future. I really want to take the opportunity to give give people a special beer experience, and doing something small that we can really pay attention to is for me the best way to go about doing that.
Jeff, when did you first start brewing?
I started brewing in the Bay Area in the late 90s. I lived in San Francisco after college, and I worked at the 20 Tank Brewery in the kitchen. It was really like I was a home brewer at that time. And the guys there really kind of took me under their wing. Like they let, well, you know, we'd harvest yeast from the tanks to make the pizza dough in the kitchen and stuff like that. And then I wound up working on the packaging line at the Gordon Biersch plant in San Jose. And from there, I went to the Jupiter brew pub that was in the Walnut Creek at the time. And then that went into a partnership with Drake's Brewing Company, which was originally Lind Brewing, one of the first Bay Area brew pubs, really, or sorry, microbreweries, which is what they were called at the time, which is really one of the first production places in the U.S. On that scale. And Drake's had just been bought by a family that owned a coffee roasting plant that was in the facility next door. And it was like kind of ground zero. It was 2000. And like the very first double IPAs were being made. And, you know, we're tasting, you know, some of Vinny's first beers from Russian River.
Pretty exciting time.
You know, like Toronado hadn't been open that long. It was a really cool time. And like I've maintained a lot of relationships with those folks through the years. And the internet, of course, has made a lot of that information sharing really easy to stay on top of. And we did a craft brewers conference was there in San Francisco in the spring, and I got to go back to Drake's and do a collaboration brew with almost a dozen brewers that had been there through the years and gone on to different things, many still brewing, but some others that had moved on to other things and got a chance to come back and see not much had changed. And that was a good thing.
Jen, you've met Jeff before, haven't you?
Yes, definitely. In all these beer circles we run in, we've crossed paths quite a few times.
Why do they call him the chief?
I don't know. Let's ask him. Why do they call you the chief?
At one point at Ithaca, we had three people named Jeff, and it was noisy in there. And I think the woman who ran the retail store got tired of three people turning their heads when she yelled. She just started calling me chief.
So it was just a woman. Yeah. Just somebody.
And it stuck.
Yeah. That was her hey.
And then, like, yeah, I think even at the time we didn't have at Ithaca Beer email addresses. But then once we did, you couldn't do two Jeffs, so it became the email address, and it just kind of stuck.
There you have it, Jimmy.
See, rule of the world.
Sure there are lots of theories. And
worse nicknames.
Definitely.
That, for sure.
It works for you.
Thanks.
All right. Well, this is fun. I mean, I've wanted to meet you for a long time, Jeff. I definitely like the Flower Power at Ithaca a lot. You just before you left, you came out with some cool beers. It's like it's a 13th or 14th.
13 was our last anniversary beer.
And it's delicious.
Like kind of like a strong wheat.
Yeah, it's like a double white IPA kind of thing.
Tell me about that beer, because I have two cases sitting at Jimmy's number 43.
Oh, you're lucky man.
And I'm wondering, should I open it? Should I wait? Should I talk to Jeff?
It's a really hoppy beer, but it's strong. So I think it'd be interesting to see how it ages. But
I say drink a couple now.
Yeah, you got a couple.
Drink
cases,
a couple,
right?
A little down the road and save a couple. Since you have a case, that's fun to play with.
So that's a good formula when you get some special beers.
Well, if you have a case, then you can kind of educate yourself on what happens with that kind of beer. I wish I had space to have cases of all my favorite beers to just play that kind of game. But I live in a studio apartment, so I don't.
Yeah, but you work at the Blind Tiger.
You work at the Blind Tiger, yeah.
So you get a lot of beers.
Yeah, but they don't have much space. Have you been down there?
No, I never went to the basement or anything.
Yeah, it's not like
no
yours.
One invited me.
Jimmy's
down.
Got one of the craziest operations in his spot.
We have a lot of
the collective keg room is something.
We have a really big
seen.
Keg room. Yeah. We share that with two other bars, Burp Castle and Standing. So it's pretty unique. But special beers. I mean. There's so many special beers coming out right now, and this 13th anniversary from Ithaca is sitting on my shelves. So I'm going to try it this weekend. But is it a Belgian style?
It's an American. I mean, I consider myself to be an American craft brewer, so anything that we do or anything that I do is an American beer by default. It's like a double IPA finished with orange and lemon peel, and Sriracha Ace and Citra hops, which are both sort of intensely citrusy. If you haven't tried it, like, you'll definitely be able to pick out those heavy citrus notes. It's very dry, fermented with an American ale yeast that really dried it right out. And, you know, a good bit of sugar to really help it attenuate out.
I'm lucky enough to have one bottle of the blue.
Oh, cool.
I love that beer.
Yeah.
I had it once. Now So when? How long should I sit on that?
You know, we always release beers that are ready to drink, but the sours tend to hold up pretty well so far.
I'm gonna kick it around until there's a special occasion. That tends
That's a good
to be
idea.
My, yeah.
That's a good idea.
Very good.
But it's ready to go for sure.
Oh, yeah. No, I had it once, and I know how great it is, which makes it tempting and makes me also want to save it to share with the right people.
Yeah. I mean, it's cool that there's an audience for these beers. You know, 10 years ago, we, you know, it's sort of a circle of life. Like, it takes the people to want to drink them to spend the money on them to make it feasible to do in a brewery. And it's not always obvious that that's going to work out in the end. Finally, I think we can say that there's enough of a movement to really do some kind of cutting edge kind of things, like stuff that maybe, I don't want to say hasn't been done before, but maybe hasn't seen commercial success before.
What are a couple other of your favorite beers that you made at Ithaca?
Well, Brood is a really special beer, and that beer's won a number of awards, which is really pretty gratifying. Cascazilla was the first beer, the first recipe I got to write there, and that was a beer that was kind of homage to a sort of Northwest style of brewing that was malty and also very hoppy. And it was sort of when we moved back to New York in 2002, particularly upstate, but I think it's fair to say New York City, there was not much of a craft
it's
beer
fair to
scene.
Say. Absolutely.
There was not much at all of a craft beer scene. And coming from San Francisco, it was like a step 10 years back, right?
Yeah.
And through a lot of the time, the sort of growth of it seemed very glacial, right? And then one day you wake up, and just in tiny little Ithaca, New York, there's five great beer bars, an unbelievable bottle shop.
It takes a little bit of movement, and then you gain momentum.
And then you
and
sort of realize...
Wait, Jeff, tell us about a couple. I don't know the places in Ithaca, so let our listeners know.
Oh, in Ithaca, there's cool there's a place called the Chapter House that's been there for probably 20 or so years. They are like a Cornell institution, old wooden walls that everybody carves their names into, you know, naked pictures of the rugby team on the wall. And they have had, you know, 40 draft lines for 20 years. So we're really ahead of the curve on that. The bottle shop that's up there, Finger Lakes Beverage Center, I don't even know where he gets a lot of these beers. I think he trades with other retailers. And I think he's been known to take stuff that would be brewery only or just available locally from us and truck it down to get something that would just be available to another retailer stuff and trade. It's been really remarkable to see the stuff he's gotten into his place. There's North Star House, which is a sort of gastropub kind of place that's opened in the last few years. And there's the Westie and Silky Jones, which are another two like sort of very fun, very crowded college age bars that, you know, 10 years ago, craft beer would have been a total afterthought. And now it's really the focus. What I was starting to say earlier is, you know, through a lot of that time, it seems like, you know, I'm beating my head against a wall trying to, you know, introduce hoppy or sour beers to people.
And it's so fun to see people
and
actually.
And then all of a sudden
wanting,
you realize it has opened up and you've played a big part of that and it's super
rewarding.
Yeah, it's really is edifying.
Well, that is awesome. We're going to take a short break, come back and talk to two brewers. We're going to talk to Jeff and to Chuck Silver from Green Flash in San Diego on Beer Sessions Radio.
I tried to make it Sunday, but I got so damn depressed that I set my sights on Monday, and I got myself undressed. I ain't ready for the altar, but I do agree there's times when a woman sure can be a friend of mine. Will I keep on thinking about you, sister, golden hair surprise, and I just can't live without you, can't you see it in my eyes? I've been one poor correspondent, and I've been too hard to find, but it doesn't mean you ain't been on my mind. I just can't make it.
Welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. Jimmy Carboni from Jimmy's Number 43 with Jen Schwartman from Blind Tiger. Our podcast tonight is sponsored by GreatBrewers.com, and we're supported by the Good Beer Seal, GoodBeerSeal.com. We've got a great group of guests here. We've got Keith and Kara from Peekskill Brewing, and Jeff O'Neill, their new brewer, who was formerly at Ithaca. And what are we drinking, Keith? One of your brew pub beers.
Sure. So we brought down a few different growlers for you. Started you off with our Zeitgeist Berliner Weiss, which is a super light wheat beer, a little bit of lactic acid in there to give it a little bit of tartness. And it's a really good example of what you can do on the brew pub level. At the pub, we serve it plain, which is how I enjoy it. But our kitchen also makes a number of fantastic syrups that we can drizzle in it, give it a whole nother flavor if that's what you like.
I love the plum ginger that we did. That was my favorite.
Those sound a hell of a lot better than the regular old
the Woodruff.
Woodruff.
Yeah, we do. We're not doing Woodruff.
Thing. Yeah.
I've noticed a lot of brew pubs. I know, like Nodding Head in Philly also does a Berliner Weiss. Is there a reason? Is it a particularly easy beer to make,
Chief?
It's, you know, it is. I'm not going to say that any beer is particularly easy to make, but you can turn it around pretty quickly. And this is actually the first beer that I brewed on my first day, November 1st. And it's something, you know, it doesn't require the long boil that a lot of beers do. It's something that I wanted to, sort of a safety net, to tell the truth. Like, I knew that it was going to be a long day, double brew, and doing something where we didn't have to necessarily replicate anything that had been done before seemed like a good bet to me, and it turned out well. And you know, most of our customers had never heard of this style of beer, and it's been selling really, really quite well for us.
Excellent. We have an email question from someone who's been on the show before, John Siegel, who I believe
John.
Is like the hot merchant.
Yay,
to the
John's
devil.
Listening.
John Siegel, his question is, what cutting-edge products does Chief have planned for Peekskill? Also, a big hello to Jen and Jimmy. And when are you going to do another hop show? Well, let's start
soon,
with the
hopefully.
First one. Cutting-edge products from Jeff at Peekskill.
Well,
he called you Chief, too.
Well, John knows damn well that I'm waiting for my hops to get here. We're getting some stuff direct from him and a couple of other farmers that he partners up with. You know, we're going to do some really interesting stuff. We're kind of putting the final touches on the plan for the brew house that we've purchased, and the details. We're working on the final details, but we're going to use a cool ship at the brewery, and we'll use it for a number of things. Most days we'll use it to hold hot liquor during the brew day, and I'm thinking of using it in place of or in lieu of a traditional whirlpool. I think if we pump the wort up into the cool ship after the boil, that deep wide, shallow tank will allow solids to settle out and sort of have the same effect as a whirlpool, allow us to flash some heat off. And we're going to do some hopping up there at a lower temperature than you'd be able to do.
And what's the result of that?
You get
lower temperature.
You keep some of the volatile things in, some of the oily stuff that some of the really intense
that dissipates when it's
for better and worse sure. And it's all theoretical at this point. I don't know anybody else that does this, so I want to play around with it. And, you know,
you heard it here first.
One of our flagship beers is Hop Common, which is a steam style lager, and of course those beers have that history of pumping into the rooftop vessel and steam coming off the brewery is one of the folklore stories about why it was called steam beer.
I'm going to take a wild stab at things, though, and I bet you anything that John there was a method to the madness of that question, and he wants you to talk about where you're headed tonight.
Oh, tonight, right. Oh, he wants me to mention his name again, doesn't he? So tonight, right after the show, I'm driving to up to northern Vermont to the Hill Farmstead Brewery, and we're doing a collaboration beer that will be the first brew on Sean's new brew house, which is virtually the same kettle and mash tun that we're buying from the same fabricator. And I really want to inspect, you know, how they built it, what we'll do particularly different than their sort of default setting, or different from, or the same as Sean wanted to do it. And we're going to make
it. You may as well collaborate while you're there.
Exactly.
Right?
Exactly. So we're going to brew a single hop double IPA with John's high oil Cascades. And I think what Sean's planning to do is that it'll be the first in a series of double IPAs called Society and Solitude. So they're going to send, we'll send a bunch of it down to our pub, and we'll have it on in a month or so. But I'm really excited to get up there and see what he's up to. And
yeah, I haven't been up there in a while, and I'm sure it's a whole different story.
Well, I hope that, so you know, Sean Hill's beers are virtually impossible to get in the city. So hopefully you guys will be the local Peekskill Hudson Valley brewery that will enable us to get some of these virtually impossible of your beers.
Well, you know, special places, he's like tiny, ours. Right? He's tiny.
Yeah, but there's a lot of tiny guys, but you know, everybody's got their special.
Sure. And we're going to, you know,
group of bars.
He's tiny, but he's growing, but he's also meticulous. So we'll see how much beer we get in the next few years.
I want you guys to make some of your Peekskill beers, and I want you to bring some to the city.
We will do everything that we can. Like I say, we're looking at being like as local as possible, and the goal is really to bring people to us and experience our sort of unique thing.
We have a pretty cool call-in guest right now. He's going to join Jeff and Jen and myself. It's Chuck Silva. He's the brewer from Green Flash in San Diego. How are you, Chuck?
I'm good, thanks.
Hi, Chuck.
This is Jimmy, Jen Schwartman, you know, from Green Flash and Blind Tiger, and Jeff O'Neill.
Hey, Chuck.
Peekskill.
Hey, Jeff.
What's happening?
You know, I know you guys at Green Flash and Jen Schwartman, you guys have a special relationship. Every time you come to New York, you guys go to the Blind Tiger. What's going on?
Are you asking why that happens?
It just seems like the right thing to do.
I agree. Like, yeah, last time we did the Green Flash Jen Schwartman bar tour, which was kind of fun when they put their beer on tap at all three bars where I worked and then followed me around. But Chuck couldn't be there for that, so I'm so glad he's coming to the city next week.
So, Jen, how did you meet the Green Flash people?
I met them when they came in to the Blind Tiger, and I was working. I think I met you over the bar, right, Chuck?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, I just I was a fan of their work and was excited to have a chance to meet them, and they're such great guys. How could you not love them?
Yeah, I think we had the beer in the market and for a short period of time, and then we finally found some time to come out and visit.
And we've been friends ever since.
Yeah, good friends.
Yeah.
So, Chuck, you're out in San Diego, and Jeff's here. Why don't you guys talk a little bit? I know you guys know each other. How does a brewer from New York meet a brewer from San Diego?
It's a funny story. Actually, Chuck and Mike popped into our brewery one day quite randomly, right? After CBC in Boston?
Yeah, we kind of went on tour. It was probably the same time frame. It was a subsequent trip, I think, to New York, and then Mike and I, we came down from Boston and went to Manhattan, and then went and did the tour of New York.
Yeah.
So I went through, you know, Ithaca, went to Buffalo and Rochester and Albany. We just was stopping Syracuse as well, so we just kind of popped around.
It's a lot of driving.
On that trip. It was. It was quite a trip.
And Chuck and I were on a committee this fall in Yakima to select lots of hops that one of the brokers was buying from the farmers. I'm wearing my jacket right now, or I was. Or do you still have yours?
Mine's on. I'm wearing it.
It's
a little cold in San Diego this week, so actually I'm wearing it.
And the funny thing about the coats is we both should have ordered extra larges.
Uh-huh. So you're sleek and fashionable.
Snug. Yeah, I'm wearing it as a underlayer most of the time.
You know what? I was I asked for a different one, and they sent me one.
I guess
maybe you should make the call.
I bet you get a larger size. They sent me
an XL.
Oh, that was nice of them.
Well, Chuck, you're coming to New York next week, and we're excited to have you. I know you're going to go. What's your itinerary next week?
Let's see. I fly in Monday. I'm going to go shopping on Tuesday. Wednesday, I'm going to hit over the Blind Tiger for big tasting and just hang out and have some beers with Jen and the crew. And then Thursday, we're going to go over to the Pony Bar. That's my first time.
Oh, great place. Pony Bar. Wonderful place.
10 beers over there as well. I think we've got, how many did we send over the Tiger? Was it 15?
Probably, yeah.
13, 14, 15, something like that, in the Casca West Coast. And then got a couple days to just have fun in the city. And then we're going to do a Christmas dinner over at Jimmy's 43.
That's going to be so much fun.
Everyone's invited, too.
Yeah, so we've got another 13 beers, a couple barrel-aged beers, and a couple other treats that I had saved.
Yay. So what's the craziest beer you're sending this way that week?
The craziest beer, probably Super Freak.
No, that's a good one. Oh, I haven't had that in a while.
You've had it before?
Yeah, I've had it before.
Only one of those went out, and that'll be over at the Blind Tiger.
It's a funky freak.
We've done Silva Stout over at the Blind Tiger before, so you won't see it at the Tiger this time, but it'll be over at the other two places, at the Pony Bar and Jimmy's 43. And then we also have some barrel-aged barley wine. It is the season.
Yeah.
So we've got some...
How old is it?
From 2008.
That's going to be tasty.
And I just racked it out of the barrels within the last month or so.
Nice.
That's great. Well, Chuck, you also have an interesting story. We're talking to Jeff about how he got started. How did you get started? What was your first brewing job?
My first brewing job was at Hang Ten Brewing Company in San Diego, which is a brew pub. It no longer exists. Brewmaster there is now the brewmaster at Carl Strauss, Paul Segura. So I trained under him quite a bit. And then, from home brewing to through American Brewers Guild for some training, and then that was my first job. My apprenticeship I did in San Diego as well at a place called Hops Bistro and Brewery, another similar size brew pub. And then I ended up brewing there after about a year and a half at Hang Ten. I ended up brewing at Hops, going back to where I did my apprenticeship. It was a one-man gig there, and that brewer left, went back to Pennsylvania, and so I jumped on that position, and I spent 4.5 years there learning different yeast strains and malt varieties and training myself, if you will, to create new beers.
And from there, you went to Green Flash?
From there, I did go over to Carl Strauss for about a year at their production facility. And then I did a couple of brews out at their Carlsbad location as well, which is a brew pub. And then Green Flash brewmaster left, and so I saw that as an opportunity to get back out and do my own thing. And sure enough, Mike Kinkley needed that that expertise too for recipe development and. So the timing was right for me to jump in there.
Yeah, it took Green Flash to a whole new level bringing you on. And that's not just because you're my friend.
The direction of Green Flash initially was to do session ales that were well-crafted and flavorful session ales, but I think the challenges of getting the beer to the market and the competition in that area, or how many pale ales are out there, to compete against Sierra Nevada and all the other pale ales of the world is not the best business plan.
I have a question that I was going to ask Chief earlier, and I want to pose it to you too. When you took over, were there certain recipes that you were required to just continue with because of the brand recognition for a while and that you retired? Or, are you still doing any of the old recipes?
Yeah, the beers that existed then were for Green Flash were extra pale ale, Ruby Red, Nut Brown, and I needed to brew those three beers, but I was allowed to, you know, revamp the recipes. And I did, and I made the extra pale ale a little more floral. I made the barley or the brown ale a little richer, but lowered the alcohol at the same time, mm-hmm. make it, you know, truly a sessionable beer. That's what they wanted. And then Ruby Red, I changed completely. It was a combination between Irish red and American red, and it was kind of a bigger beer, 6%-ish, and then I took it down to turn it into an alt beer. And okay. I won awards, actually, for all three of those beers. And then we turned right around and retired the Ruby Red. But that was partly because we rolled out the West Coast IPA, and then we just didn't have room for that fourth four-pack beer. And
people started to identify with the new recipes as Green Flash, and you could retire some of that away.
Yeah, the I started November 2004 with Green Flash, and then by March 1st, 2005, we had rolled out that West Coast IPA. Mike came to me and said, "Hey, I want to make an IPA, and I want to call it West Coast IPA, so it needs to be a benchmark type of a beer." And so I, you know, developed the recipe.
You certainly delivered that.
Thank you.
I love it out here.
By August of that year, it was our number one selling beer. It became our new flagship.
That's a good story.
Since then, we've actually retired the Nut Brown and then later the Extra Pale Ale. Some beers that we did for anniversary beers. The second anniversary beer, which was one of the early brews I did in 2004 as well, was the barley wine. And now that's become, instead of an anniversary beer, that's become a regular year-round beer for us as well.
So how about you, Chief? I mean, are you brewing a lot of the Peekskill beers that have existed?
Yeah, well, like I say, I've been on board for 6 weeks.
We're through
one round of...
Oh, yeah. I'm curious what the plan is for that.
Today. So we went from no beers on day one to 6 beers this week. I sort of retooled a couple of the recipes, but we stuck with a couple of the favorites, house favorites, Old Wagon, Vanilla Bourbon Stout, and the Cream Ale. And then the rest we're kind of going to run with and change up and sort of treat
See how it goes. Yeah.
And like I say, we have a really receptive audience that's curious. Like, you know, we have 16 draft lines, so right now we've got 6 of our house beers and 10 guest beers, and they're all over the place, and it's really cool. There are some people that come in just for dark beer, just for a pils, so we've got the whole spectrum that we can put our twist on once we have the facility.
That's awesome. Hey, Chuck, can you stay on with us for a few more minutes?
Yeah, you bet.
Okay, we're going to take a short break, and we'll come back with Chuck Silva and Jeff O'Neill on Beer Sessions Radio.
Someone found a lighted house late one night, and he saw through the window a sight. A big man in a chair, and little tiny men everywhere. He's the man with all the toys. How thrilled
Okay, welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. We're sponsored by GreatBrewers.com and supported by the Good Beer Seal. Okay, we've got Peekskill, Green Flash, and it's a pretty intense show. We've got some serious brewers on the air. One thing about you guys, you got Chuck at Green Flash and Jeff. You guys are serious professionals, aren't you? You really are. You're like, you're not just home brewers now. You guys are the serious professionals. And I think it's good. What do you think makes a brewer? What are the professionalisms? I mean, because there's not like a school, you know. There's not a brewing school.
Well, there
it's
is.
Not, oh, there are several.
Well, there is, but there's not like an MD. I mean, is there? Well, yeah, let's talk about what makes a brewer professional. How about that, Jeff? You go first.
Meticulousness, attention to detail. There are home brewers that make world class beers. There's no doubt about that. But they don't do it by hosing out a bucket and throwing a bunch of ingredients together. You have to really experience. You know, like you don't know how to, you're not born knowing how to do it. And you have to drop the ball a number of times to understand. It has been my experience. Mistakes have been my best teachers.
And Chuck, what do you think makes a brewer professional, or the points of a professional brewer?
Well, I would say a lot of things that make anybody a professional, but have to agree with Jeff. You know, the attention to detail and the passion for what you do. I think that goes a long way, you know, enjoying what you do. And then, you know, seeking out. So taking it beyond the science and into the art side, you're, you know, seeking out and learning your ingredients, training your profile, your flavor, your palate for learning new flavors, whether it's in foods, and then you can somehow translate that into, you know, a fermented beverage anticipating what flavors of raw ingredients are going to produce in a fermentation. So you certainly passion, attention to detail, and then always looking forward to, you know, unique flavors.
Do you guys think that there needs to be a professional brewer training program in the States, or more of them?
There certainly is. I trained at the American Brewers Guild myself, which is a trade school. UC Davis has a program, a Brewmaster's Extension program. Siebel Institute in Chicago area. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So we have some very well-respected brewing programs, Jim.
But that's it. I know. I mean, I know of them, but I mean, that's really not much.
There exists a master's brewers program that American Brewers Guild, I think, at least at one time has had an extended training program to prepare you for a master brewers exam.
Where's the American Brewers program?
Well, to be a American Brewers Guild is now owned and run by Steve Parks, and he trained at Heriot Watt University in Scotland. So he has quite a brewing background as well, as in the UK as well as in the United States. And his last gig, I think, was brewmaster at Otter Creek, but now he's just full-time doing the American Brewers Guild. There's a lot more demand for the education again.
He's opening his own thing as well, Freestyle.
Oh, yeah, really?
I think he's getting pretty close. He posted a picture on his Facebook day of like a cutting through concrete with a pickaxe.
No way.
So I think he's actually in the ground. He's opening something in Middlebury.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
All right. Jeff, did you take a?
I'm a Siebel grad. Yeah, Siebel. And also I've taken some of the IBD exams, which is basically the exam that the Davis program prepares you to take at the end of your undergraduate studies. And I passed the first one so far. There are three modules, and they are difficult. It's like a five-hour trying to get as many words on a page as you can kind of thing. Passed the first one, and I didn't pass the second two, the packaging, and they're really intense tests.
Intensive brewing sciences, yeah. And engineering, biochemistry, chemistry, water chemistry, microbiology, and then engineering concepts.
And we know, right? So we know there's some programs in America, but are there other programs in Europe? And do you think the European brewing training programs are better than the American, or what do you think?
Well better is better is subjective,
depends on what
right?
school of thinking you want to train in.
Yeah, there's certain, like, maybe just European brewing is different. It's maybe not as broad based, like they traditionally are focusing on
certain styles.
Like most European breweries, and this is changing for sure, like they're not making 20 beers. They're really, like, they need technical expertise to run their breweries,
and right.
It's just different. Like there's just
Stefaner, and you're going to learn the German way.
Right.
And you're going to learn that the German way is the only and the way and the correct way to
and
do
I think
things.
Europe in general has a more steeped tradition of apprenticeship, and the American way is really kind of figure it out and take it from there. It does seem to me like with the number of breweries that are opening, I know that the program Siebel, ABG, UC Davis, they're booked out for years at this point. Like you can't get into them practically. And it does seem like there are not as many fully trained brewers as there are opportunities for them at this point.
And then things like wild yeast beers or the cool ship that you're working on, Jeff, are there anywhere places to learn about
no,
that?
No, that stuff we're just that's making up self-taught. As we go along. Yeah. I mean, we that's might. When you I mean,
take all your experience, but of course, and one you of the, start getting really creative.
Yeah,
with
I mean,
technique.
One of the great things about, and you know, this is horse has been beaten to death, but one of the great things about our community is like I can call up Chuck and say, "Hey, Chuck, how did what you know what's that hop in West Coast? Like, how are you doing your dry hopping? Like, he showed us this cool video of your that charged." Dry hop thing that you clamp onto the top of the tanks, right? Like that was right. really cool to see. And like there's such an openness of, you know, yeah, how are you doing this? How are you doing
a community,
this?
Coast to coast.
And there, of course, there are exceptions and some people that are
very
more
closed.
Generous with yes. information than others. Right. But right. generally speaking.
And you were asking before about how these guys know each other. And sure, they met when Chuck happened to be out on a trip and driving around New York looking at, you know, visiting
well, you
different
know,
breweries.
Actually,
but
Jeff and I, we met. Probably through the trade before that. Yeah.
What I was
going to
say was at
you know,
CBC, at
yeah,
GABF.
CBC. We would have met at the Craft Brewers Conference before.
Right. And that's a great way for some of these brewers who maybe have heard of each other when they you know get together and socialize and they're there to talk shop and learn from each other. And it's really pretty amazing what can take place at those events.
And the internet has made the world very small.
And then the internet, of
there's
course.
There's a wealth of information out there now. And like Jeff said, there's a sharing of information as well.
Chuck, are you expanding your brewery as well in San Diego?
Yeah, we moved into our new brewery this year. So last September.
And where's
we,
that?
We broke ground Mira Mesa Boulevard in San Diego. So we moved shop from Vista. And we closed Vista in July. We started brewing here the very last day of June. And so we've been brewing here since then.
So you really closed the old brewery the day you started brewing at the new brewery? There was no, like, double timing?
The first day I brewed here, I brewed two batches of beer back-to-back. And then I had Matt up in Vista. He brewed the last brew in Vista on the same day. It was a Saturday. And then 2 weeks later, we had racked all the beer off, plus that very last brew. We actually racked that into barrels. And
what was that beer?
It just so happens that the cross street, the corner that we're at is called Flanders Drive. And so we brewed a Flanders and threw that in barrels for hopefully a release next year.
But tell
Good
us the name
know.
Of that beer again, because we're going to write this one down. What is it? Green Flash, what?
Flanders?
Yeah, so I think we're going to call it Flanders Drive Ale for our, and probably Drive. Release it for our 10th anniversary.
That'll be fun.
Yeah, no doubt.
You heard it here.
So if you don't mind, I want to give Jeff some props and say congratulations on your new digs.
Thanks,
I
Chuck.
I was talking to John Siegel. You're welcome. Tipped me off. You know, obviously you didn't say anything while we were out for hop selection, but it's great to hear that, you know, you got to move out and make a lifestyle decision that sounds like it's going to be a really great thing.
Yeah, we're really excited, and maybe not this time around, but the door is always open for you to come and brew at our place next time you come around when we have the new facility online.
Yeah, thanks for the invitation.
Yeah.
So, Jeff, tell us about Chuck. You, please stay on, and thanks so much for coming on. Jeff, so tell us about the new works up in Peekskill.
So we're moving about a block into a really big four-story stone building that was once a furniture warehouse. The place is built. Like, it's a solid cement building. Still directly at the Metro North Station, just a 45- or 50-minute ride out of Grand Central. And we're putting in a 15-barrel system.
What barrel system do you have now?
We have a 3.5.
So cute.
And we have three 7-barrel fermenters. So, you know, our capacity now is a few hundred barrels over a year. When we start brewing in June, our capacity will be 1,000 barrels. And then we'll see where that takes us. We'll have a little bit of space to go bigger from there. But like I say, we want to keep it really as local as possible and bring people to our place for the experience. And, you know, you've seen it, like there's beer tourism these days.
Question, is there going to be a bottling line?
We don't have any immediate plans for that. Okay. We may do some special release kind of bottles, but like we're not looking to be
right.
to move case
curious,
boxes.
Yeah.
It's more about sharing a glass of beer with somebody who's come in for a meal and really having that whole experience.
So your chef's here also, Sean Corcoran, the head chef at Peekskill Brewery. Hey, Sean, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
We saw a great review in the New York Times talking about, they call it a gastropub.
Yeah. I mean, we like to think of it more as a tank-to-table kind of operation. Yes, we do have some pub dishes and, you know, things like that, and that are technique-driven. You know, we take the simple pub and dish and bring it to another level with local ingredients, local proteins, things of that nature.
All right. What's your favorite dish on the menu right now?
Favorite dish right now is actually one of the snacks. I really enjoy the sardines and toast we have in the menu. Yeah.
I like that kind of food.
Oven-dried tomatoes, really nice sardines, simple dish, but just really hits home. You know, grew up eating things like that and something I really enjoy.
And what's your favorite beer that
Actually, favorite beer is what I'm drinking now is the Shotgun Willie IPA. I think there's a lot going on. It's a delicious beer.
All right. And Keith, you want to say a few things before we sign off?
Yeah, sure. You have to come up to Peekskill, 45 minutes north on Metro North, and you have to have a Shotgun Willie IPA alongside one of Chef Sean Corcoran's pork belly dishes. It's the best thing on the menu.
All right. And Jen, have you been up there? What's the name of your friend's bar?
Birdsall House.
Birdsall House. And what's the gentleman's name? Tim something?
Tim Reinke.
And
he's a partner of the Blind Tiger. And he and his wife were living up there with their two kids in Beacon, and he was commuting. And he partnered up and found this incredible deco bar and opened up Birdsall House, which is a wonderful tap house, not a brewery, though.
Yeah, and we've got
got
a great relationship.
Great relationship
with them.
We did a cast
there last night. Actually.
Tied one on there last night.
And it's so great because, you know, then people say, sometimes people think, oh, is there competition? But the truth is, what it builds is a community where now beer drinkers from the city will see a destination.
Yeah, we're really,
where they can go up to Peekskill and they can hit a couple great spots.
We're talking about a lot of cooperation where, people come up on the train, go eat lunch there, head down the hill to our place or vice versa.
I know.
And
have two meals, spend the whole day, drink
happy.
A bunch of
go
great
home
beer.
As happy
yeah.
as possible.
And get back on that train.
And we certainly send people there and they do the same
thing. If I take the Metro North, can I come back with a growler and drink it on the train?
The answer is yes.
Really?
There you go.
Great thing to know.
And of course, like, yeah, let's do it next weekend.
And of course, in Grand Central now is a beer table where you can buy singles to go for the ride up, and it's totally legal. So it's like,
you can make an entire day of it.
You know, we want you guys to be sending or mentioning, you know, take a trip up to Peekskill for a Saturday or
Monday. Yeah.
All right. So we got the chef and everybody here from Peekskill. What's it called again? The Peekskill Brewing Company or what is it?
The Peekskill Brewery.
The Peekskill Brewery.
It's as simple as that. Straightforward. Right. No complications.
Can you do an Irish accent?
No.
Why would you? That's
Sean,
a question.
Can you do an Irish accent?
No.
Oh, come on.
Why? What?
The Peekskill Brewery.
That seems Irish to you?
With an Irish accent, it
would
sound pretty cool. Oh,
okay.
We'll work on that for next time.
All right. Next time you guys come back, get an Irish accent. And Jen, anything special going on at Blind Tiger we should know about?
Yeah, Green Flash, a week from tomorrow. Not tomorrow, but the 21st, week of Christmas. Come
all right.
Celebrate with Chuck and
And then Jimmy's
Mike and
number
Lisa.
43. We have a Christmas, and it's called Christmas/Hanukkah dinner. Because it's both, and it's December 25th, all afternoon. If you're in New York City, you want somewhere to go.
Where do you get tickets?
You can buy it online through the Jimmy's Number 43 website, or you can come that day. And it's a big open house. You can come meet Chuck Silva and Mike and Lisa, the owners. And Jen, you're going to be there, aren't you, too?
Yes, I will.
We're going to have roast. It's going to be a big traditional Christmas dinner with all those great Green Flash
maybe I'll
beers.
Stick around town an extra day or two
next
week.
You should come
in. Extended family.
Yes. Welcome.
And other Good Brew Steel bars, we've got Thursday, December 15th, IPA night at Beer Craft, a great beer store that's also a beer bar. And also Thursday, December 15th, Barcade in Brooklyn will host its 7th annual Winter Beer Night. So I'd like to thank our sponsors at greatbrewers.com, and thanks again to the Good Beer Seal. And you can also follow us on Twitter at @beer_sessions. That's really cool, I know. Thanks to Jen, Jeff, Keith, Sean, and Chuck for joining me here on the Heritage Radio Network. We'll be back next week.
Thank you, Jimmy.
I'm Jimmy
thank
Carbone.
You,
Jimmy.
Bye, Chuck.
Thanks to our producers, Jack Inslee, Brie O'Connor, guest coordinator Brett Thompson. We'll see you next time on Beer Sessions Radio.
Bye, Chuck. Beer.
This little song is more to the point. Roll out the barrel and lend me your ears. I like beer. It makes me a jolly good fellow. I like beer. It helps me unwind, and sometimes it makes me feel mellow.
Thanks for listening to this program on the Heritage Radio Network. You can find all of our archived programs on heritageradionetwork.com, as well as a schedule of upcoming live shows. You can also podcast all... Thanks for listening to this program on the Heritage Radio Network. You can find all of our archived programs on heritageradionetwork.com, as well as a schedule of upcoming live shows. You can also podcast all of our programs on iTunes by searching Heritage Radio Network in the iTunes Store. You can find us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter for up-to-date news and information. Thanks for listening. Thanks for listening. And Silversnet. And Silversnet. And Shimmerfman. And Silversnet, and a shimmer from the net soon is the spot of her ocean of soul off net. Oops, if not enough, Nicky.
Her window ears did her ahead of me and sillering the e-bombs is in the ass. Hi, this is
Carlos. C-Punk.